Intervju Radija Študent. Jaga Jazist. V Ereš intervjuju danes gostimo skladatelja in multiinstrumentalista Larsa Horntveta, gonilno silo najbolj popularne norveške in sploh ene najpopularnejših skandinavskih jazzovskih zasedb, Jaga Jazist. Zasedba, ki prav letos praznuje 20. obletnico ustvarjanja, se je v ospredje nove skandinavske ob-džezovske scene znašla nekje na prelomu tisočletja, potem ko je svoje plošče objavljala pri trendovskih založbah Ninja Tune in Small Town Super Sound. Tisto, kar jo dela zanimivo, pa je njihovo samosvoje križanje džeza z elementi post-roka, elektronike, filmske glasbe in še česa. Jaga Jazist danes večer nastopi v okviru Ljubljanskega jazz festivala v Križankah. Preden bomo slišali posnetek pogovora, ki je nastal pred nekaj urami, pa poslušamo skladbo Kitty Wu z njihove lanskoletne koncertne plošče, ki so jo posneli skupaj z Britten Sinfonija. Thank you.
to Ljubljana yesterday, right?
No, we came this morning, actually.
Oh,
so
because first it was announced that maybe you will come yesterday.
Okay, I don't know anything about that.
Did you come directly from Norway?
Yeah. So now, yeah, we.
It's, you're not on a tour. It's just this one concert now.
Yeah, it's just this concert. So we left Oslo at 3 a.m. And then we
are
came.
You going to get some sleep before the gig tonight?
Probably not. And then we're going to leave very early tomorrow morning. And then actually our half of our instruments didn't, you know,
make it here.
So,
so is that
but
going to work?
Huh?
Is that something usual for?
It happens, absolutely. It has happened many times before. But some of our stuff came, and so we're gonna have a quick sound check, and then we just have to, you know, the rest of the gear is coming around 7.
Mm-hmm.
So, so yeah.
How many people are in the band right now?
8.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a lot.
Mm.
Do you all travel together when you go to concerts? Because, you know, usually or sometimes it happens that bands, people from bands are living in even various countries, so they arrive kind of separately. Do you like travel like one big family or?
Yeah, sure. We all live in Oslo, mm-hmm. in Norway, so so we travel together as much as we can, and then sometimes the guys in the band are pretty busy with other things as well, so sometimes, you know, they come in from other countries or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but we always try to travel together, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that strikes me is that we usually get to hear just or mostly electronic and jazz music coming from Norway,
mm.
playing here. Why is that? Why is the electronic and jazz so popular among Norwegian musicians?
It's
would you agree with that? That
yeah, I agree, but it's always it's also I think the reason for that is it's partly because Norway hasn't really had success like with commercial music, like pop music, like except for bands like A-ha and Røyksopp.
Oh, right.
There's a few of them, absolutely, but still, you know, like if you look at the last 30, 40 years, you know, if you compare it to Sweden, for example, it's a very different scene. Because Sweden had ABBA, they had Ace of Base, they had Max Martin, all those like super commercial, successful artists, and you know gave or like put money back into the music industry in Sweden, and so Norway never had that basically, and so I think that there's a lot of really good pop music coming out of Norway as well. That's at least my opinion.
Kind of becoming known internationally as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And
what are some of the names? Maybe or what are some of your favorites?
Some of the names are, of course, Røyksopp, and one artist that I've worked with a lot is Susanne Sundfør, and she sings with Røyksopp at the moment,
mm-hmm.
On their world tour. And you have. Other artists like there's a bunch of them, but the problem is, of course, that not so many of them get to play outside of Norway that much. So there's I think there's a lot of good stuff happening, but it's just, you know, difficult to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Norwegian jazz and electronic scene has been. Exactly that. It's been a scene all the time where people have tried to play abroad as much as possible and get to know or get to be known internationally from like since the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's
was this because of the domestic artists? I mean, domestic electronic and jazz tradition, or were you exposed to more like international acts?
My opinion is that it has to do with that you know, everyone in Norway says that or sees that it's very difficult to make it internationally like a pop, you know, act.
Hmm.
And so maybe that's, you know, a reason for people to get into more alternative music and And I also think that it has to do with funding, because Norway has a very good funding system. So the government is really supportive of the culture, music, and you know, all kinds of culture actually. So and that makes it actually possible to make music which is maybe not super commercial, but can be very interesting. In other ways, you know.
What are some of the conditions for this support of the government? You know.
Nah, it's, you know, you never know if you're gonna get it. You know, you have to apply, and so it's not.
Do they maybe favor younger musicians?
Not really. It's very much about, you know, making a mark in Norway, and then, you know, applying in a way that, you know, that you're ambitious and you know, you really want to, you know, do something. Serious, and then you know, it's a very lucky thing for us that we have this, that we can, you know, get some funding, you know, to make it work, basically. So that's a very good thing about Norway, I think.
And if you go a bit back to this jazz being popular in Norway, is it Jaga or Jaga? Jesse, this is one thing we always get confused about.
In Norwegian, it's Jaga Jazzist. And then it's almost impossible for anyone else to say it, so we say Jaga Jazzist when we're outside of Norway.
Yeah, it's been, this year, it's actually your 20th anniversary, which is quite surprising that you started at such an early age. You know, you were like 13, 14 years old when you started it, 14. With your brother, 14. What was it about jazz that inspired you, you know, at such an early age?
I don't know. Me and my brother and sister, we kind of grew up in with our parents being very much part of the local music and theater scene. So we kind of grew up with, you know, knowing a lot of musicians, basically, and got inspired by them. And then, especially me and my brother, like, started listening to Norwegian jazz at an early age, but was, you know, at the same time as we were listening to hip hop and
electronic music
and rock and you know, all kinds of music. But we were really, like, at some point we were kind of nerdy when it came to jazz. So when we started this band, it was basically inspired by another Norwegian band, which is like, they're probably like 20 years older than us, and they had a band called Oslo 13, which is, it was like a 12-piece band, instrumental music, and which they made like modern jazz music, basically. And so the band was inspired by that, but we didn't want to only do the jazz things. We did all kinds of stuff, you know. We when we were kids, we were like, you know, we had rap vocals, and we had you know, more like Eastern European kind of gypsy related music, and we, you know, just blended all kinds of stuff together. And
how did you come across all this music? Was it through your parents?
Yes, some
because
of
it's
it,
quite interesting that, you know, like a 14-year-old boy would, you know, search for music like that.
Yeah, but it was way earlier than that. It was like when I was 10. So, but I actually went to the library and just listened to a lot of albums and just got inspired by that kind of sound. But, you know, that kind of jazz has a huge standing, not commercially, but still in the jazz community, the whole ECM sound, and there's a couple of Norwegian labels as well, which never, you know, sold any, you know, not, they didn't sell much records, but it was still like a thing that I was very inspired by, and we all were kind of inspired by that. So, but when we started, it was like we're basically like two groups of friends that just came together and started playing. And I would say like half of the band didn't, you know, had never listened to that stuff that we listened to. So we kind of just blended all kinds of music.
You mean they didn't come from a jazz background?
No, not at all. So we always had that, you know.
You know, when you mentioned these two Norwegian jazz labels, were they maybe something that could be compared to Small Town Supersound, or was smaller?
It was kind of the same size, but you know, didn't really go that much outside of Norway, I would say. It's jazz music in Norway has never sold any records, you know, it's a very marginal thing.
Yeah, but it may be marginal, but you know, we really like Norwegian jazz here in Ljubljana. We get to see many artists, really cool bands.
Yep.
One of my favorites, which is Parky, Norwegian, is probably Atomic.
Yeah.
They're great playing live.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you said you were inspired by this more jazz music, one thing that surprised me in a way is that I read somewhere that you didn't have a conventional jazz music education at all, that you were self-taught. Mm. Is that so?
Yeah, but I am, and my brother and my sister and two of the other guys, but then a lot of people in the band who has been in the band have educated themselves, went to university or...
But it is you and your brother who write most of the music.
Yeah.
Do you write in... Did you learn to write in conventional music notation?
Yeah.
How does that work?
I just learned to read music when we...
When you compose, you know, do you write stuff down and then...
Mm.
I mean, how do you record music? Is it the whole band at the same time in the studio or...?
Sometimes, but most of the times we record, the rhythm section for itself, and then we do the horns and do a lot of overdubs and stuff. And it kind of varies. the last studio album we did, I wrote basically everything down on, you know.
By yourself in your studio?
Yeah, no, like in. Wrote it down, you know, in the scores, and then we rehearsed it for months, and then learned to play it, and then of course stuff happens and people have a lot of input, and then when we go into the studio, it's usually a remix situation in a way that we don't want to capture exactly what we have rehearsed. We want to, you know, experiment and do, you know, get some surprises during the process. So we usually it's a very open process when we're in the studio, which I like, because I don't want to, you know, write some music and you know, have it sound exactly how I thought it would sound, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that interesting for me.
It's a process,
and you know, 9-piece, 8-piece band, so it's good to have like, people coming in with other ideas, and it's a long process, the whole album thing.
Mm-hmm. This new album you mentioned, this is the one you recorded this year, but it's not been released yet, right?
Yeah, we're working on a new one now. And this album...
Because you've been working on it for quite a while now, right?
Yeah, sure. I've been sitting with this for maybe 18 months or something.
Did it become more difficult, you know, recently to write Yagai Azist album than it was in the past?
Yeah, kind of, because of course the goal is to try to do something that is surprising for us. And of course... After 20 years, you have done a lot of different things and different, you know, combinations of instruments or whatever, you know. So it's harder to, you know, surprise yourself, basically, and that's what I want. So, but the way we do it now is very different than the previous album, because now we do it like just one and one, like we're never more than two in the studio at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's more like it's really like a studio album where we're, you know, producing ourselves and we haven't rehearsed at all for this album. We just record all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, when we're 10 people, now we're eight people. You know, you have like a band dynamic, and you have, you know, been together for such a long time, so it's kind of easy to go into, you know, everyone has their roles in a way. So especially if we're struggling with something, and you know, we start quarreling or, you know, discussing like heavily, then it's, you know, difficult for people to, you know, have, you know, be there and like have a suggestion and go for it, you know, like say, yeah, I have this really good thing if if really, you know, the mood is really bad, and sometimes it is, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why we're doing this, is try to get the most out of everyone. So mm-hmm. just, you know.
So you are totally open to input by other musicians?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Because some composers, you know, they're really strict about their music, so it's different.
I am very strict, but I'm also, you know, trying to,
that's probably,
to not be that strict.
Right, that's probably why you started the solo project as well. You know, do you have some songs from the new album finished?
Not completely, but it's like 90% or something.
Mm-hmm. So, are you going to play any of those songs tonight maybe, or not yet?
We're
going
to play a brand new song tonight, if we get all our equipment, which we just rehearsed it last 2 days. So we have like a studio version of that song, and then now we have a live version of that song, and then probably the live version will, you know, feed back to the studio thing and vice versa. So it's it's the first time we try out that, you know, new songs. And it, you know, all the songs that I make now, they're so long. They're like, this one's like 10 minutes, and I have another one which is like 15 minutes. And another one is 14 minutes, so it takes time to rehearse them, basically.
Since you say that it was a different process, like one-on-one, you know, do you rehearse much before you play live?
Yeah, we do, absolutely. So, but what we do is that we always try to make the most out of an album, like, and don't care about what it's gonna sound like live, you know. So you don't want to think about that when you're making an album. But then after we finish the album, then we rehearse like crazy to try to sound like we do on the album. And of course sometimes that's impossible, and then you have to do something else, but most of the time it's a very, very good way to you know, basically sound the way we want to sound. And then also what happens is that we kind of add a little bit more improvisation for the live thing, mm-hmm. to make it more, you know, interesting
for you and for the people,
both us and the audience, I guess. Mm-hmm. And not so strict, because if you're playing like 50 gigs or 100 gigs or something, you want something to change, like to be able to change every night in a way. Mm-hmm.
You know, the first time I saw you was like 10 years ago in some festival in Italy.
Yeah.
And at that time it seemed like you were in a way, not in a conventional way, but in some way a conductor on a stage, like conducting the band. Was that impression right, or?
You know, we kind of, it actually, we tried to do as little conducting as possible, but you know, someone has to cue a few times, and you know, there's But we kind of share that. My brother who plays the drums, he does a lot of cueing, and I do some, and the keyboard player. It kind of depends on, you know, if who has like a free arm basically to do that, you know.
When did happen this transition for Yaga Yazis that you started playing? Because this time, when I saw it 10 years ago, it was a really small stage, you know, it was almost difficult for all of you to fit on that stage. But nowadays you're playing bigger stages. When did this transition happen that you started playing at bigger venues?
You know, it depends. I think, you know, we've been playing large venues in Norway and other places in Europe as well. It kind of depends on how many, you know, on how popular we are in that particular place or whatever. So we can fit in a very small venue, and we also have, you know, no problem playing for a bigger audience. So it's actually
it varies.
It's kind of absurd actually, because we played, you know, not more than like a year ago or something, we played at this little club in Norway, which in Oslo, which is super small. And it's almost like no one thought that we would fit, you know, but we always managed to fit somehow. Although this stage is probably not more than like 10 square meters or something. But you know, we enjoy playing small clubs, and we enjoy playing, you know, bigger festival venues. And it's just, you know, it doesn't really matter that much.
What will happen if all the equipment doesn't arrive for the gig tonight?
Then we have a problem.
Is it possible, you know, to do a concert without some people, or?
No, not at all.
Maybe we'll have to, or, you know, the promoter will have to find some people in Ljubljana, maybe, who can borrow you their equipment.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it happened before. Maybe when Henry Grams was here, I think one of his, or maybe several of his strings got busted or something, okay. And they borrowed another bass from somewhere.
Yeah, sure. The thing that we have a lot of, you know, more special instruments that are very difficult to find, at least on short notice. So we'll see what it, you know. They said it. All the gear will come around 6-7. So just hope for the best.
Excellent. So this would be it.
Yeah. Okay.
More time. So
cool.
Thanks a lot.
Tako je svoje misli pred nocojšnjim nastopom zasedbe Yaga Yazis na Jazz Festivalu Ljubljana v Križankah strnil njen zaradi neprispele celotne tehnične opreme, takrat še nekoliko zaskrbljen šef Lars Horntvedt. Z njim se je pogovarjal Goran Kompoš. Intervju Radija Študent.